Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Breda Pest Management, the official pest control of UGA Athletics.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
We are lucky on this show to have the former Georgia quarterback Jake Fromm join us each and every week. That's true again for us here today. We're in that time of year in which Jake's doing some of the OTA stuff with the Washington Commanders. That's the NFL organization that he's a part of. And so during that time of the year, we typically pre-record the interview with Jake the day before it airs. I'm telling you all of this because we recorded with Jake yesterday. And a conversation that you're going to hear us have in a few minutes actually set me up for something that I wanted to talk about off the very top of the show. I would say there is one thing about G-Day that I love more than anything else. And to me, it's the best thing about G-Day, especially in contrast to the rest of college football. So I want to kind of have a couple of minutes here of just sort of having fun and telling you why I'm excited about Saturday. And as a way of setting that up, let me say this, is that some of you know I'm a pro wrestling fan. And if you want to go back to like old school days of pro wrestling, you had two locker rooms. You had the good guys locker room and you had the bad guys locker room. And the thought was, you can't tell the story well if the good guys and the bad guys are entering from the same locker room. Because if they're all dressing together, then are they really enemies? And if they're all able to sit next to each other and put the trunks on, then are they really, you know, going to get out here and make us believe that they're at each other's throat and willing to fight, you know, and scratch and claw and all the stuff that pro wrestling needs you to do. So to tell the story well in the old school days, they don't do as much of this anymore, but in the old school days, you had to come from separate locker rooms. And I love this about G-Day. Historically, anyway, one of the things we've seen from G-Day is the two different teams are actually real teams. And it's the first team offense against the first team defense and the second team offense and the second team defense. And they're split up into two teams and they dress in separate locker rooms. They have separate entrances. You know, typically speaking, the stadium, the event team there, you know, has two different videos. There's a video celebrating the black jerseys for the black team. There's a video celebrating the red team. All of it is sort of set up to look like real football. The score typically starts off 0-0, and we play something that feels like a real football game. And I'm here to tell you, that is my favorite thing about G-Day. Now, if all you do is sort of pay attention to G-Day, I don't think you realize how significant that sort of is. But if you're one of these, you know, Georgia fans who's also kind of more broadly a college football fan as well, you sort of realize that, gosh, the more and more time passes, the more kind of Mickey Mouse a lot of these spring games become. In fact, I want to show you a couple of examples here. I was reading just stuff that I've read this week, starting with like one of the big news entities that covers Penn State. Headline: Penn State to play, quote, traditional spring game. The story from, I guess it's WTAJ, says, just days before the annual blue-white game, James Franklin announced what fans can expect on the football field. Here's the story. Unlike how some programs try to throw a unique spring showcase, Franklin said that Penn State's going to play, quote, a traditional game. So the idea of Penn State playing a traditional game being, you know, unique enough, that was worth its own story up there in the news media. I kind of like the way in which whoever the writer is in this describes it as a unique spring showcase. I'm a little bit conspiratorial from time to time. I have a little bit of a conspiracy theory about some spring games. I sort of feel like some of these are almost, I used pro wrestling as an example before. I feel like some spring games are virtually fixed. You know, they're kind of predetermined of, hey, we want the offense to look good, so therefore we're going to put the twos against the ones and give them a chance to sort of kick them around a little bit, and it becomes a spring showcase for whatever the coach wants fans to believe about the offense. Sometimes that seems to be the case in some of these places outside the bubble of Dog Nation here. But the Penn State media entity there saying, hey, it's a headline-worthy event that Penn State's going to play a traditional spring game. Compare that to Ohio State here for a moment. That's a, obviously, Big Ten rival of the Nittany Lions. Cleveland.com, big news entity that covers Ohio State. Here's what they've reported this week: that Ohio State's football spring game format has been announced, and it's going to be a media advisory sent out Tuesday that said offensive scoring is going to be standard. So you get touchdowns and field goals. But now listen to this. This is the most Mickey Mouse thing in the world. But defensive scoring is 6 points for a touchdown, 3 points for a takeaway, 3 points for forcing a three and out, 2 points for a sack, and one for forcing a punt. According to the release, the first three quarters are going to be 12 to 15 minutes apiece, including clock stoppages. And the fourth quarter is going to consist of, listen to this now, a 10-minute victory lap with a running clock. Now, how much does that get on your nerves, and how much does that sound like Ryan Day and his hair beard to have such a convoluted format for a spring game? And to add insult to injury, this thing is on Fox over-the-air broadcast television. The people up at Ohio State don't have any more respect for the game of football to have a real football game for something that's going to be on network television. This thing's going to be on Fox, the network, not FS1, like big boy Fox. And they've got like all this crazy convoluted scoring for, you know, what you get for a takeaway, what you get for a three and out, what you get. Like, I can't keep up with all of this. I like the fact that at G-Day, historically, you got two different teams. The score starts off at 0-0, and you score the thing the way the football typically works. I really appreciate that. But what's even worse than what Ohio State's doing for a game that's going to be televised on Fox is what Lane Kiffin is doing at Ole Miss. This is coming from Inside the Rebels, who's the 24/7 site that covers Ole Miss. They're writing this week that Ole Miss has announced it was making some pretty big changes to their annual spring game, the Grove Bowl, which is a kind of a cool name for a game. But nonetheless, with a plethora of players, by the way, plethora is always an interesting word to use, plethora of players recovering from injuries and off-season surgeries, fifth-year head coach Lane Kiffin has opted to make this year, listen to this, Lane Kiffin has opted to make this year's spring game 7-on-7. And they're also going to have various skill competitions as well. They're essentially turning their spring game into field day. They're going to have sack races and, you know, three-legged races. What are the skill competitions? I don't want to see a skill competition. I want to see football. I don't want to see 7-on-7. Listen, there's 1,000 7-on games taking place all over the world every single weekend this time of year. If you go to the Grove Bowl, if you go to Oxford and Vaught Hemingway Stadium, don't you want to see 11-on-11 football? Don't you want to see that? But apparently at Ole Miss, they're doing 7-on-7, which if there was ever a coach that would opt for a 7-on-7 spring game, I guess it'd be Ole Miss coach Lane Kiffin. Now, hear what I'm saying, you don't hear what I'm not saying. I'm not here to tell you Georgia taking G-Day more seriously makes them better at football. The honest truth is I actually don't think it probably does. But it is good for fans, right? I mean, it is fun for us. And, I mean, listen, if it was 7-on-7, I'm sure we'd be breaking it down 17 different ways. I'm sure we would. But isn't this just better? Like, I don't want 7-on-7. I don't want Ohio State's convoluted scoring system where figuring out who's winning is like doing your taxes. I don't want that. I don't want it to be a headline that we're playing real football the way that it is up in State College. I just like the fact that Georgia still treats G-Day like a football game. And kind of like pro wrestling, they sort of keep it kayfabe and sort of buy into the idea that you got two different teams who, at least for this particular day, sort of don't like each other very much. We're going to talk to Jake Fromm more about that here coming up in just a moment. So I still really appreciate that. Even if it doesn't actually make Georgia a better team, it does make G-Day a better day, and I think that's probably a pretty good thing. Now, in light of the idea that we're taking this seriously, we're treating this as a real football game, I do think as we get closer and closer to Saturday, there is one big storyline that kind of emerges here. Once again, all in the mindset of this isn't really real football, but if we're going to pretend like it's real football, let's pretend like there's a very big, obvious storyline here. And that is the whispers, the rumor, the innuendo that somehow the Georgia offense is ahead of the defense in a way that typically in the Kirby Smart era, we haven't always come to expect. And Kirby Smart, if we're being honest here, if we're being candid, has done a lot to contribute that to that narrative himself. And some of this goes back to an interview that Smart gave to ESPN.com a few days ago. This is something we've talked plenty about, but I want to give you a reminder here of something that Smart said when speaking with Chris Lowe. The question was, what's one of the things that's gotten your attention about this team through the first part of spring practice? And Smart says, well, either we're a little weaker on the defensive line or really good along the offensive line. Smart says the glaring thing I've seen at practice is the offensive line has done a really good job. That's not to say we were subpar on defensive line last year. We just weren't great. He said we didn't have a dominant guy. Now, this is what Smart says to conclude this line. But we're always going to be good on defense. I don't know that we're going to be great this year, but I think we have a chance to be great on offense. So if you take Smart at his word, why wouldn't we? According to Smart, the offense, especially up front, had perhaps gotten the better of the defense some during spring practice. Now, we're also led to believe behind closed doors the scrimmage this past Saturday to the extent there was, good intel about that. Defense maybe had a better day and sort of reasserted itself in this overall battle. But the kind of sort of prevailing narrative at the moment is offense a little bit of ahead of G-Day. I should say a little bit of ahead of the defense going into Saturday. So much so that when I was on 960 The Ref, I do a Wednesday morning interview with them each week. I sort of jokingly said that I thought the red team, the first team offense, was maybe about a touchdown favorite over the black team and the first team defense, at least the way we kind of typically expect it to be. I sort of thought, first team offense, maybe about a touchdown or so favored over the team with the first team defense here right now. But who knows? This Georgia defense, even a little bit shorthanded and even, kind of playing a little bit hamstrung because of the fact that even with a sort of a normal G-Day format, you're still not tackling quarterbacks and things like that. Who knows? Maybe this defense gets a chance to sort of reassert itself and kind of fire back at those who think that for the moment it's not on par with the Georgia offense. With that in mind, yesterday we got a chance to hear from Malachi Starks. Now, Malachi, I would say for now, is the best player on this Georgia defense, but he's also nursing an injury. And he's not participating in spring practice, nor will he participate in G-Day there on Saturday. But in light of the people who say, a year ago, Georgia wasn't as dominant defensively as it had been, it certainly sounds like Malachi and this Georgia defense still takes that as a good level of motivation. Is it enough to get the nod over the first team offense on Saturday? I don't know, but the defensive players healthy enough to play, you can expect them to play with a lot of fire based on what Malachi Stark said yesterday. Here is Malachi.
We take pride in defense here. That's the biggest thing. And, we always didn't play how we wanted to. We always finished how we wanted to. We never played how we wanted to. You're never going to play a perfect game. And I think the thing that we just did was just try to hone in on the things that were important, when it plays defense, it takes first level, second level, and third level. So, if they score, you just can't say, it was a linebacker, it was the D-line, the safety missed a fit. If they score, it's something wrong at all three levels. So we just all tried to be on the same page. And taking that from last year to this year, just making sure everybody is on the same page, we all have the sense of urgency, knowing what's important.
So Malachi Starks says that's what he expects from his defense this year. And as he's watching and probably doing a little coaching on the sideline on Saturday, my guess is he's pushing the Georgia defense to show some of that against this highly touted Georgia offense on Saturday there as well. So bottom line is simply this. At Georgia, G-Day, at least for the most part, still approximates real football. So if we're going to want to watch a real football game on Saturday, that also means real football storylines. And the storyline thus far during the spring is, did you hear about so-and-so on the offense? Did you hear about how good the offense looked? Perhaps at times getting the better of this Georgia defense. Does that play out for our own eyes to see on Saturday? I cannot wait to find out. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Breda Pest Management. Happy to have you with us, no matter how you get to us. Video, 10 a.m. across all platforms. Radio, app and sports radio, 96 The Ref. Podcast, posting the show right there at noon. Apple, Spotify, the worldfamousdognation.com. We love our loyal podcast audience. These are the people who've been with us the longest, and at least in many cases they are. And we are so, so grateful for all of you. And really grateful to our friends at Breda Pest Management who make today's show possible, the official pest control provider of UGA Athletics. That means if you're lucky enough to be sitting inside Sanford Stadium on Saturday, if you're going to the baseball game against Missouri that afternoon, if Foley Field, or anytime you're hanging around the UGA campus, just keep in mind that all those athletic venues protected, bug, critter-free, termite-free, because of our friends at Breda Pest Management. And the same work that our friends at Breda do for UGA, they can do that for you there as well. But more importantly, this is more than just bragging rights. It's kind of cool to say, hey, the official pest control provider of UGA Athletics takes care of my termite, my pest stuff. That's kind of a cool thing to say. But more importantly, the legacy of success and the history of quality service that Breda has provided also gives you a chance to be kind of leverage some of that for your benefit here too, because they've been in business since 1975, got 125 employees stretched all across our market area, taking care of people all the time. I'm out and about a lot. I got, all kinds of stuff. I'm driving around, baseball and things like that. I see these Breda trucks everywhere, all the time. And I know they're out there taking good care of people, and for multiple generations of the Breda family, that's what they've been doing. And they can leverage that for you by putting more money back in your pocket just for making that decision. That's exactly what they want to do for you. Put more money back in your pocket. That's how they want to take care of you. You'll make money literally for making that switch right here, right now, today. So find them online. It's BredaPest.com. B-R-E-D-A. That's BredaPest.com for a lot more on that. Great to have them bringing Dog Nation Daily to us here today. So as I told you before, Jake Fromm in a bit, really good conversation with him. Mike Griffith coming up in a moment, more of a G-Day preview with him there as well. Prior to that, though, I want to go around the doghouse. Now, in a minute, I got an update on something we started yesterday. Great response to this, and we'll give you more information on that. And we're going to do something really cool tomorrow there as well. So I'm going to tell you about all of that here coming up in just a minute. Some really, really good stuff. So stay tuned on this. A little bit of housekeeping stuff, but it's all stuff I think you're going to really like. We're going to get to all of that here in just a bit. Prior to that, let's go around the doghouse. And one of the names we've probably talked about a lot here this week is Gunnar Stockton, because the feeling is, boy, it's great to hear the fact that Carson Beck's having such a strong spring. Pretty much all of the rumor and innuendo would lead you to believe that's indeed the case. We're going to talk later on about the fact that another important media outlet has ranked Beck as the top quarterback in college football. You feel really good about that. And yet there is also a fairly strong certainty that Beck at the moment is a little bit of a sure thing. You kind of know what you have from him. So from an entertainment perspective, you're looking forward to watching Carson on Saturday. But from a football intrigue perspective, you might be a little bit more interested in what Gunnar Stockton brings to the table. And you're looking for some hints and some clues about whether Stockton is perhaps ready to travel a similar path to what Beck traveled to Georgia, waiting, buying his time. It's like 3 years of kind of waiting for his moment, then emerging as a starter and becoming very successful. Could Gunnar Stockton go on a similar journey here at UGA? Is he embarking on that journey here right now? Well, we got a bit of a hint about that going back to the end of last season when Gunnar got some extended time in the second half of Georgia's blowout Orange Bowl victory over Florida State. What did Gunnar Stockton learn from all of that? Well, Gunnar told us yesterday.
Yeah, it was awesome. Leading up to it, I got a bunch of reps. Just like this spring, I've gotten a couple ones, reps, twos, and a bunch of threes. And I got a bunch of reps, and I think it's valuable. And I try to cherish it and just make the most of it.
Yeah, I like that from Gunnar Stockton. And I think a lot of us are very curious to see, okay, what's next? What else does Gunnar have on offer? And we saw kind of where he was at the end of last season, but in the life of a football player, these few first months of the calendar year are pretty valuable. You know, what you're learning in January, February, what you're working on in the practice field, March into April. And on Saturday, Gunnar gets a chance to demonstrate some development. So how would he define success for himself on G-Day? What is he hoping to show on Saturday? Gunnar also talked about that yesterday a little bit as well.
Yeah, heck, I want to show everybody that I can play. That's what I tried to do in the Orange Bowl, and I thought I did. And heck, it's an opportunity to just go play a game. That's the way I look at it, play with everybody.
A phrase you hear sometimes here on the internet is so-and-so understood the assignment. I feel like in this particular case, Gunnar is demonstrating the fact that he understands the assignment. That's what a lot of us are really hoping to see on Saturday. Gunnar says, I want to show that I can play. I'm a guy who may not be playing, but I am capable of playing. And that's true if Georgia needs to call on me this year. That's true as a future starting quarterback, perhaps in 2025. And as I've said plenty before, for all the buzz we have about guys that could have been at Georgia or might one day be at Georgia, in terms of future possible starters for UGA, Gunnar is still the guy I'm probably most excited about overall, and I'm hoping to see that backed up by the way that he plays on Saturday. I know that Gunnar is also hoping to put all of that on display there as well. We'll make that around the doghouse here today on Dog Nation Daily. Now, a couple of notes here. First of all, there's this. Let me give a shout out to my friends at Dr. Pepper. And, you know, yesterday we were talking about our master's pool and some people were kind of joining that. And I always enjoy the interactions I get when folks email me about stuff like this. And one of the guys was calling out another soft drink that he loved. And I was joking with him to say, listen, even if you love this other soft drink, just know I'm not going to be biased against you, even though I am Team Dr. Pepper. And you better believe I very much am that each and every day. It's the treat I look forward to at the end of my show here. That's a real thing. I can actually see the box of Dr. Pepper that we keep our supply in right there in front of me here right now. I love the rich, one-of-a-kind flavor of Dr. Pepper, and I would encourage you to enjoy it just as much as I do. Stop by your local Kroger, pick some up today. It's a pepper thing, 23 different flavors, all blended together just perfectly. Nothing on a daily basis makes me happier. That little nice little afternoon pick-me-up, that little fix of Dr. Pepper, it's a great treat for me to enjoy, and I know you'll enjoy some there as well. Great to have Dr. Pepper with us. Now, speaking of the Masters pool thing, so yesterday we told you, very unofficial, this is not anything fancy, we're not doing this for money, the feds aren't going to come after us about this or anything like that, But if there was enough interest in a master's pool, we would do that the same way we did our Golden Shoe Bracket Challenge not too long ago. And I tell you, we got a great response to this yesterday, so much so that, you know, I went ahead and set all this up. So I know some of you are still getting in, and a little bit different than the Bracket Challenge where, like, the first game was, like, noon on Thursday. You remember, the Masters tees off at, like, 8 a.m. on Thursday. So get your contact information to me. In fact, let me show you this on the screen. Here's what I need from you. I need your name, I need your email, your mailing address, your phone number. All that's because I want you to have – I want to try to send out some prizes, but also the winner gets a chance to come on the show, so I need to be able to get in touch with you. So send your name, your email, your mailing address, your phone number to brandon.adams@dognation.com. One more time. I need your name, I need your email, your mailing address, your phone number to brandon.adams@dognation.com. The winner of the Masters pool gets to come on Dog Nation Daily. I'm also going to try to send out some other prizes there as well. I'm kind of working behind the scenes on some of that here right now. I think for our NCAA tournament, everybody that sent something to me, I got back to, except for like one person I didn't mess up on. So I feel like up till this point, about 10:22 on a Wednesday, anyone who's reached out, I believe I've gotten a response back to you. If you feel like I should have gotten it, didn't, double check me on that, and I'll try to get that done. But the point is, if you can get that to me sometime today here on this Wednesday, I'll shoot you back over to what you need. Yeah, there you go. A little Masters music. You love that. Send that over to me. I'll shoot it back to you, and we'll get you in. What we're doing is we're making like six picks. Top four scores count. We're kind of dividing them into tiers based on gambling odds, and that's what we're doing. So one more time, name, email, mailing address, phone number, brandon.adams@dognation.com. We'll get you a part of our Masters pool here and have a good time with that. All right, one more thing to do. Actually, let me save this because we're a little bit late. I've got one more fairly sizable announcement to make, but I'm going to save that for a little bit later on in the show. So for now, I want to keep the conversation going because I don't want to keep him waiting here. Good stuff on G-Day. Also, a lot of doom and gloom talk about what might be coming after that. So let's see if we can figure out what's real and what's not on all that front. Let's bring on Mike Griffith here today as part of Dog Nation Daily, presented by Breda Pest Management.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Let me bring in Mike Griffith here. And Mike, we were talking off the top of the show. I don't think it makes Georgia better. I really don't. But I do like the fact that G-Day still feels mostly like real football. I guess you got some running clock stuff a little bit. You don't have as much special teams you probably do in a regular football game. But it's still, for the most part, 0-0. It still sort of feels like regular scoring, regular football. And from a fan standpoint, that's a lot more interesting than the, like, vacation Bible school version of, you know, activity period that some of these spring games sort of feel like. I don't know that it makes Georgia better, but it is more fun for fans.
Well, it's interesting to see which players step up. It's interesting to see, you know, how the transfers are fitting in, and I'm sure they're going to have Carson throw a lot to some of the incoming receivers, and we want to all see how Arian Smith has progressed. There's been some really positive reports about how Arian's done in the past scrimmages. Dominic Lovett also having a really good spring. I don't know that we get a great read on the run game. It just seems like the run game, it's more about kind of protecting your feature backs. I don't know how much we're really going to get to see a Trevor Etienne or even Rod Robinson for that matter. And because of the nature of it, you know, if it's going to be ones on ones, it's hard to run the ball in Georgia football. So that's going to be really interesting to see what the run game does as well. So for me, it's really, you know, there's so many midterm enrollees now, Brandon. I want to say between the transfers and the midterm enrollees, I think that's like 28 new players. So for me, I just want to see how those guys look in a uniform and who plays well in the scrimmage opportunity.
Yeah, what we said a moment ago was if you want to kind of find the G-Day narrative right now, to me, it seems like it's been the whispers and the rumors that the offense has been ahead of the defense. Now, maybe on Saturday, there was a little bit of a pushback on that by the Georgia defense, as you might expect. But even Kirby Smart himself sort of contributed to this, that the first team offense has probably had a better spring than the first team defense. We are led to believe, true or not. But that's, is that in your mind kind of the narrative here of, you know, does the offense validate that with a performance on G-Day, and can the defense do something to sort of strike back on that? They're shorthanded. They've got probably more injuries. I'd say the format is probably, kind of hamstring them a little bit because you take some of the physicality out of this. But is it fair to say that's kind of the top G-Day storyline of, Can the number one offense continue to be better than the number one defense based on what the rumor mill has led you to believe has been true for thus far during the spring?
I don't know if I can draw any long conclusions just because the defense is really oftentimes handicapped in what they do. And Kirby doesn't want to show a whole lot of the blitz packages, and the offense really doesn't want to show their best either. So I don't draw a lot of conclusions from the spring game. I look more individually at players and how they perform. Because let's face it, they can script this game to go however they want. Remember, it was a couple years ago when it was a televised game and there were offensive fireworks in the first half, and then in the second half, they pulled Brock Bowers and Ladd McConkey, and the defense dominated. So, Kirby had a television audience, and he, they scored a lot of points early and showed they could play defense, and everybody kind of won. But that had to do with what personnel were in the game. So that's why I say I would really be careful about drawing any conclusions based on a spring football game, because we're going to see exactly what Kirby and his staff want us to see.
Who are some individual players you're looking forward to seeing?
KJ Bolden is one. I asked about that at the press conference yesterday. I was talking to Malachi Starks about that. And, he's an exciting player, and it's a position in that secondary where you lost three players that are headed to the NFL, your safety and your star and a cornerback. So you want to see how some of those young, the young cornerback, the young five-star corner, you want to see him. Obviously, you want to see, Xavier McLeod, the incoming transfer from South Carolina. He looks the part. Can he be a contributor? You want to see what some of those younger guys can do. We know Kristen Miller had a pretty good scrimmage against the offense in scrimmage too. So, there's just a lot of areas that need to be shored up. I want to see the receivers. I want to see Colby Young, the receiver transfer from Miami. I want to see London Humphreys and Michael Jackson III. I want to see what they bring. I want to see how ETN looks out there. I know he is smaller. He probably won't get a lot of reps. So those are some of the newcomers I'm interested in. And that's just seeing where they're at right now and how they're used. I mean, again, the coaches aren't going to let the cat out of the bag and give everybody a bunch of game film on what they plan to do with everybody. So it's probably going to be limited, but I think you can tell by watching, just in terms of how explosive these players are. Maybe you can pick up on their ball skills since they're playing football. It's not just warmups. It's 11 on 11. So for me, it's seeing how the newcomers do. And then I suppose I want to see how in charge Carson looks. I mean, I thought he looked in charge last year. But is he more assertive? Does he look more vocal? Is he getting in players' faces? Is he pumping up his teammates? To me, these are things that would make him a better quarterback, and that, Kirby's talked about that, he hasn't been the most demonstrative guy. Does that change? Is he taking more ownership of the team now that he's a second year starter? I think he probably has. I'm very bullish on Carson, and I'm expecting on him looking really good on Saturday.
Yeah. And beyond that, we've also talked a good bit this week about Gunnar Stockton, who, it's a different situation because last year Carson was competing to become a starter. But what you saw from Carson, at least I felt like I did, I saw a guy that had the appearance of being much more mature, much more ready in spring of 2023 than he had ever been at any point in time prior to that during his time at Georgia. And, Gunnar still has the luxury of not having to be the guy here this year. But does he show you some hints that he could be the guy, both in terms of, well, if, Carson were to get hurt and he needs to step in and play for a brief period of time or something this season, or perhaps as a future starter in 2025, Carson Beck's patience was rewarded. He waited, and I think he became a better football player because of that. Is Gunnar Stockton going on a similar journey? That's one of the things I also think is kind of fun about Saturday. It gives us at least a little bit of a glimpse about kind of where he is in that process. Because I'll tell you, Mike, I still am of the belief that Gunnar is a very intriguing quarterback prospect compared to quarterbacks that Georgia could have had, Georgia quarterbacks that they might eventually have. I still think Gunnar is a very intriguing prospect compared to any other quarterback you want to put him up against.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that, holds Georgia high school state records for total touchdowns and total yardage. And, there's obviously been a lot of great Georgia quarterbacks. What he did at Raven County was fantastic. I think it's a little different offense if he's in there. I think he's more of a dual threat. His ability to run the ball really adds another dimension for Georgia. I think you saw that in the Orange Bowl. And I think that you would probably call the offense a little different. And that's fine. I think that you adjust your offense to whoever's at quarterback, but maybe the difference between Carson and Gunnar is a little bit more extreme than we're used to, because Gunnar, has had he said he had some tough practices. He had a good scrimmage early where he said he completed about all his passes, and then he said he's had some bad days. And that is typical of any quarterback. I don't know that I think Gunnar Stockton has the NFL upside of Carson Beck, because I have not yet to see him throw the ball as well as Carson or as consistent. I'm sure he can run the offense at the line of scrimmage. He brings a dual threat, you know, but Carson Beck has special arm talent. I would venture to say that Carson is, you know, perhaps the most talented Georgia quarterback since Matthew Stafford, if you're just measuring it on arm talent and NFL qualities alone. That doesn't mean Gunnar can't be a good quarterback. He certainly can. I mean, we saw that with Stetson Bennett early in his career. You know, Stetson wasn't the most accurate guy in 2021. He got much better in 2022, and they designed the offense around him. And, you know, I kind of look at Gunnar as kind of like a Stetson Bennett. I mean, he's a guy with good mobility and toughness. He's a gamer. I think he could be an effective starting quarterback for Georgia if he's given the chance. It sounds like there will be a transfer portal quarterback coming in. I just don't know who it'll be. And will that guy be good enough to be the number two? Or will Gunnar hold the job? And if you're going to get a number three, why bother? You know, I remember asking Dabo Swinney about his strategies on multiple quarterbacks. And this is back when Trevor Lawrence came in and took the job. And he said, you don't recruit backups. You recruit starters. And then you see who starts. And I think that's what Georgia's going to do. I think they're going to try to recruit somebody that they feel is capable of being a starter. And then, as Gunnar said, it's supposed to be about battles and competition. So I know that's saying a lot, but at the same time, I think it's a complex question.
So that's an interesting comparison between Dabo and Kirby. Now, what I would say is that speaks to a pretty big difference between the two programs, and perhaps why Clemson has struggled as much as it has late, because what we've seen from Georgia teams under Kirby Smart is the 85 scholarships are utilized to their absolute maximum, and we spend most of our time wondering how Georgia is going to get down to the 85. Places like Clemson, we've seen them go to bat during the season with 70-something players on scholarship. They are not as deep of a program. They don't make as many offers as a program like Georgia does. They just don't recruit the same way UGA does. So while I certainly would believe that Dabo Swinney is probably not as interested in his backups as other programs are, I would say one of the things that has made Georgia Georgia is the fact they do think about number twos. They do think about number threes. They think about scout team. They think about having a third team offensive line so they can get more reps during practice for a third team, you know, unit overall. So I think it's a very interesting quote from Dabo Swinney. I would suggest that that's a pretty stark comparison between both, you know, Kirby and Dabo, and perhaps not in a favorable way for Dabo when you see the way in which that program is, you know, kind of receded in the background a little bit the last couple of years.
Well, I may have misspoke. What he's saying is that every quarterback that he recruits, he believes has the potential to be a starter. That's not to say that they don't develop players that are on their second and third team. He's just saying that you don't go out and sign a quarterback with the intention of them being a backup. I think Georgia goes out and recruits starters at every position too. I don't think they go out and recruit guys and say, oh, this is going to be a good second or third team player. I think they recruit every year players that they believe have the potential to start. And then over the course of the careers, it sorts itself out, right? Iron sharpens iron, and guys are in different places on the depth chart. Some have the potential to work their way up. Trayvon Walker, a great example, Quay Walker. But I may have been misunderstood a little bit there. Dabo's not saying that he doesn't develop backups or that backups don't develop at Clemson. What he was saying is, when you sign quarterbacks, you believe that they can all start, or else you don't sign them at a program that's playing at a championship level. I mean, when you look at Dabo and Clemson, they won two national titles, just like Georgia did in the college football playoff era, and he had success against Nick Saban. They have fallen on hard times. I do think that him being somewhat averse to the portal has hurt his program, but I also think they don't have the resources that Georgia has. I also think that being in the ACC is a crippling blow, because they don't get the same amount of television revenue distribution. So they don't have the money that the SEC schools have, and they're in a real pickle. Them and Clemson and Florida State both. So I don't think this is a knock on Dabo Swinney. I think Dabo's a Hall of Fame coach. I think he's done a great job. I think they did a whale of a job the last time they played Georgia. We still remember they kind of crossed even Todd Monken up. You know, they thought they were going to get one defense and they thought they were going to get all this Clemson pressure, and then it didn't come. So they did a great job. I think Brent Venables was still there then. So I think Dabo's bigger issues right now is the staff and the budget. And to your point, they have not done a good job in the portal. And Georgia hasn't had to until recently. And now we look and see five of the nine transfers on the Georgia team are at the receiver position. So every program, though, Brandon, has shortcomings. Every program has things they want to work on. It's interesting when we talk about Georgia, when I talk about Georgia, you know, I'm setting the bar pretty high, right? I'm comparing it to 2021 Georgia, which had five first round defensive linemen, and that's just ridiculous. But, you know, we got used to Georgia being just the most dominant team. And, you know, they still haven't lost a regular season game since 2020. It's not like Georgia's gone anywhere. Yeah. Georgia's right there. They're a field goal away from perhaps another national title.
All right. So in the time we have left, post G-Day, you're going to move into starting April 15th, the 2-week period of the transfer portal being open again. And a lot of Georgia fans, perhaps rightly so, are concerned about what this could be. Now, first of all, I'd believe anything. I mean, we're in a time in which I'd believe, you know, pretty much anything. And yet I'm also kind of on guard for some of like the real heavy sort of doom and gloom of, oh, you guys better just buckle up for whatever. I'm a little bit on guard for some of that, you know, there as well. So what do you think that 2-week portal period is likely to be like for Georgia and the rest of college football overall? Because last couple of years, I would say the spring portal has been a little more quiet in terms of high quality players available than the winter portal has been. And this year's portal period is also a little shorter as well. What do you think that spring portal is going to be like?
Well, it's really interesting because of all the talent they brought in the secondary. And I think there's a feeling that there's so many good bodies back there. There's so many great players with great potential back there that maybe somebody gets squeezed out. I think Georgia, I don't think they won the portal last year, just to be honest with you. I don't think that getting Dominic Lovett and Ra-Ra Thomas equaled losing a Donnie Mitchell. I thought they lost on that trade. So a bit different, you know, other years, you know, Lawrence Cager came in and was fantastic. And Eli Wolf came in and filled a really good need. And hey, Stetson Bennett wasn't a bad transfer either. If we want to get technical, he transferred back from Jones Junior College. So Georgia has done well in the portal. I think Trevor Etienne is huge. I think this is a great addition. I'm excited about it for Georgia. But to your point, there are going to be some guys that leave. And Kirby has told us that attrition is good. It's a good thing. But what he wants to see, he wants the young players that are freshmen and sophomores to give it a chance to develop. Now, if you're a third-year guy or a fourth-year guy that's running third or fourth string, it's healthier for Georgia and for you to go somewhere else where you can start. There were some, you know, a couple of veteran players, I think, are at Syracuse, maybe a good example of that, or a couple of players at Syracuse. You know, or Purdue is a good example. I think Purdue has four Georgia guys, and I had a chance to talk with the Purdue head coach, Ryan Walters, and he's thrilled with the transfers that he got. And he loves them, some Island Green and Delanis, Dylan Morissette. I mean, they're just absolutely thrilled with what they have. So I think those are the kind of players that leave. You know, there's been some exceptions. There's been an outside linebacker or two that have gotten away. But look, when you've got as much talent as Kirby Smart recruits, you can't get them all on the field. And I think what happens is Kirby has a good communication with his players. I think that he has a pretty good idea right now who's going to be on his roster and who may be entering the portal. And he probably has some players targeted that Georgia's going to be bringing in. I mean, I thought the Bear Alexander being in the portal, I mean, could Bear Alexander come back and be an impact player at defensive tackle? Is he a train wrecker or a havoc maker? I don't know. I'm not sure, you know, the quarterback situation, right? Will there be a quarterback that comes in that could be the number two? I don't know that. But it sounds like Gunner said, Coach Smart said there needs to be four scholarship quarterbacks, and he agreed with that. So I don't know about doom and gloom. I don't look at it like that. Sometimes you win, some you lose. Losing to Donnie Mitchell was tough. That was a game changer, I thought. But maybe Trevor Etienne is the game changer this year that leads the Dogs to another national title.
We shall certainly see, Mike. Thanks for your time on the program today. We look forward to seeing you on Saturday there for G-Day. And, of course, back here on Dog Nation Daily but presented by Breda Pest Management again very soon there as well. Thanks for your time.
All right. Thank you.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah. So, I mean, look. We know this is what's next, right? And we also are aware that last year on G-Day, you know, the Barry Alexander stuff was happening while the G-Day thing was going on. So, you know, I don't have any sort of, you know, actionable intelligence on that right now, but it's interesting that Mike sort of goes there with, you know, the what in some people's minds sort of a crowded situation at cornerback. Harris, who there had been some rumors about, with Julian Humphrey, who there had been some rumors about. Obviously, Dalen Everett, the guy who played more a year ago, and Ellis Robinson is the guy that is such a talented prospect that, of course, he's going to earn buzz. I think this is a situation, just from the outside looking in, this is not like expert analysis. This is just my sort of knee-jerk take on all this. I think it's a situation where it seems like Georgia may have more than two starter-level players at that cornerback spot. The phrase that Smart's been using a lot this offseason is above the line. You know, the best that I can tell, my assumption is, maybe that's a better way of saying it, my assumption is that Georgia's probably got a handful of cornerbacks who are kind of above the line. Just so happens that's the spot where there was transfer rumors back during the winter. So what I'm hoping to see on Saturday is I'm hoping to see a pretty healthy rotation. You know, seeing a lot of those guys playing really frequently. In the thought that much the same way that Georgia's kind of rotated a bunch on offensive line, why couldn't you rotate a bunch at cornerback, assuming that you know, those players continue to be kind of above the line the way that you sort of think they might be. So, you know, who knows? We will obviously see, and we'll be ready to kind of follow it and talk about it wherever it kind of, you know, goes from there. But there's no doubt that kind of one layer below the surface, there's a lot of fan chatter right now about what March 15th might look like when that brief portal window opens up. So we'll see where it goes. For now, though, we're going to go cruise around the SEC courtesy of Royal Caribbean. And I know where we're going on that, a portal straight to Port Canaveral for April the 22nd, getting on board and being there at Perfect Day Coco Cay. I mean, can you believe that? Now, we're also going to Nassau in the Bahamas there as well, which has a lot to offer there too. But admittedly, I am very, very partisan to Perfect Day Coco Cay. I just love it. Look at those cabanas over the water right there. I mean, wouldn't you love to do this? Talk about the lap of luxury here. One of those over-the-water cabanas like being Bora Bora. You got the Hideaway Beach there. They've got their own cabanas there too. You can also kind of rent and be a part of. You've got Oasis Lagoon, the wonderful pool there, Thrill Water Park there, tallest water slide in North America. You've got the Chill Side there too. And really, you know, when you see Splashaway Bay and some of the things that families get a chance to enjoy, there's no better family vacation right now than what Royal Caribbean offers. But also brand new at Perfect Day Coco Cay is Hideaway Beach. And it's kind of a Vegas pool party vibe. You know, you've got the DJ kind of in the pool, you get the swim-up bar. So many great things going on with Royal Caribbean right now. Perfect Day Coco Cay, big part of all of that. Now, Jessica Slater is the one who helps us plan our Royal Caribbean cruise vacation. And you can give her a call, 770-718-9147. That's 770-718-9147. Let me try that one more time. 770-718-9147. I have a tendency to talk a little fast sometimes, and sometimes it all just sort of runs together. jslater@dreamvacations.com. That's also the email address there as well. And you can do like we've done, plan your own Royal Caribbean cruise vacation here in 2024. Mike brings up Bear Alexander a moment ago. Bear Alexander, as many of you are aware, is on the move again. Last year at this time, transferring from Georgia to USC, now is leaving USC. He's going to be transferring elsewhere. I do not believe Bear Alexander is coming back to Georgia. I don't believe he'd be welcome to do that. But I will tell you this. I do believe Bear Alexander can still play. And I think there is sometimes something to be said for getting the guy. You know, I like they sometimes say in sports, you don't want to be the guy that follows the guy. But sometimes you do want to be the guy that follows the guy who follows the guy. And I would say in the case of Bear Alexander, maybe it's the same way. It's like the version of Bear you got a year ago when he was sort of feeling after doing a couple of nice things in the national championship game, he was the next big thing. Maybe that's not the time to be in the Bear Alexander business, but maybe a year after being at USC and realizing what a dumpster fire that team is on that side of the ball, and now you realize, okay, well, now I'm sort of, you know, moving into my third year out of high school and my clock is ticking for going to the NFL. I mean, I'm not going to tell you that Bear Alexander can't be a valuable component to some team's defense. Maybe it's like a situational pass rusher. I don't know how valuable he is on first and second down right now. But on third down, there may be a little something to it. So I'm not going to tell you that Bear Alexander doesn't have talent that won't make him attractive to somebody. I just don't think it's Georgia for a second bite at the apple there on all of that, and perhaps with good reason. And the other thing is, we're a little bit old-fashioned. We don't pick on players. We don't certainly go after Georgia players. We don't even go after, like, rival players. We have a kind of a little bit of a soft touch compared to the players. We go after coaches a little bit more. Frankly, you know, if you're making millions and millions of dollars, you can fend for yourself. Coaches are big boys. Players, even in the NIL age, which a lot of these guys are getting, you know, significant money, we don't beat them up too much, and we're not going to beat up Bear Alexander too much either. However, honesty compels me to admit that in the sort of win-at-all-costs, cutthroat game of talent acquisition right now, pointing out proofs of concept is fair game. And looking at a defensive lineman who's perhaps considering Georgia and USC and telling that defensive lineman, be careful you don't become the next Bear Alexander. Be careful you don't waste a year of your life being a part of a program that's not serious. And USC is not serious. There's some Trojan fans who are probably watching right now are like, yeah, but we hired a defensive line coach. He coached Aaron Donald. That's all fine and well. Go out there on the trail and try to sell. I know we weren't serious before, but now we're doing business. Now we're ready to do the things we should have been doing all along. Not always a very easy sell. What we do know about Lincoln Riley is this. He's had two different stops at major programs as head coach, and he hasn't had a defense yet. And he hasn't fully developed the potential of a defensive player on either of these two programs. Not USC so far, not Oklahoma ever. And if you're a young man who has prodigious talent, you don't want to give that talent over to a Lincoln Riley and have him hold that talent hostage the way that he has for so many other defensive players who thought, now it's going to be different. But with the pillow soft Lincoln Riley programs, it never is. And we're not going to pick on Bear Alexander, but we think it's fair game to point out that defensive guys who've gone to play for Lincoln Riley have squandered the seasons they spent with him. And be careful you don't become the next cautionary tale and all of that. We just think it's fair to point that out. I thought it was very interesting to see that Carson Beck has been named top quarterback by ESPN. The sort of all the lists that we've seen here thus far of top returning quarterbacks in college football have kind of all had Carson Beck there at the top. By now, we've kind of gotten used to seeing that. And as we've talked about before, you know, G-Day being a little bit of a glimpse to kind of you can't confirm yourself as the best quarterback in the country based on the way you play in a spring game. But looking the part is fun for fans to see. But I think it's also interesting to see, you know, what else is going on behind Carson Beck. If Beck is sort of thought to be the top returning quarterback, what's happening behind Carson Beck? I thought it was interesting. The ESPN list, they had Dylan Gabriel. Now at Oregon is the number two guy on that. You know, maybe at this point in time, that's the way that Oregon's going to be. They're just going to transition from a good transfer a year ago, Bo Nix, to a good transfer now, Dylan Gabriel. Perhaps that's the case. I also think it's somewhat interesting that, you know, we've talked a lot about the hype around Ohio State, you know, thus far this season. And I think we had on one of our shows this week the idea that, according to one of the online, you know, sports books right now, 44% of their national title bets are going the direction of Ohio State, far more than twice as much on a per-dollar basis as what's coming on Georgia. But it's interesting to note that when you look at top 10 like this from ESPN.com, Will Howard, the transfer from Kansas State to Ohio State, he's not on this list. He's not to be found. And you are left to wonder, well, is Ohio State going to really be that good if they don't have one of the best quarterbacks in the country? Because, you know, positionally, position value-wise, we've come to expect the Ohio State quarterback position to be kind of worth a good bit. Perhaps it took a little bit of a step back last year with Kyle McCord, but is Howard a true upgrade over Kyle McCord? I think there's a very fair debate going on right now about whether or not he is. Maybe that's the case. I think we're also not quite so sure how Chip Kelly, who's respected as an elite offensive mind, but is his brand of offense going to be better than what Ryan Day's brand of offense has been? Because you can knock Ohio State for a lot of things, but I've never really heard Ryan Day's play calling criticized all that much, unless it's a late game situation, which the game's on the line. At that point in time, he sort of turtles up a little bit. But during the regular portion of the game, I've never heard a lot of criticism for Day as a play caller overall. So the point is, by now we've come to expect Beck to be treated as the best quarterback in the country. Maybe he'll prove that to be true. But who's his top competition? That tells you a lot about where this season is going. Let me also mention one more thing here for a moment. And listen, I promise we're not CNBC or Bloomberg or something like that, but I do find this story to be a little bit interesting. And I kind of asked our Cody Chavins, one of our producers, if I was right about this, and his memory is the same as mine. So there was a story that came out this week that in 2025, Auburn, which for a long time has been an Under Armour school, is shifting over to become a Nike school. And what I was asking is, doesn't it seem like, and some of y'all know like the gear world better than I do, and I guess ironically I'm wearing an Under Armour shirt today from the Rose Bowl back in 2017, but doesn't it seem like about like 10 years or so, a little bit less than 10 years ago, doesn't it seem like Under Armour was about to be the thing in sports apparel? Steph Curry was an Under Armour guy. Jordan Spieth was on top of the golf world at the time. He was an Under Armour guy. You had Auburn embracing Under Armour, South Carolina, the "We will protect this house." Remember those commercials that are on all the time? The Under Armour, like, chief executive was a Maryland guy. There was this thought that Maryland was going to be the new Oregon, and they were going to wear different uniforms every week, and they were going to, like, have a big, you know, sort of pre-NIL apparatus to get players or something along those lines. Like, that all just went away, didn't it? I mean, like I said, I'm not telling you their stock. I have no idea what their stock price is or anything like that. I mean, this is not a business conversation. But am I not right in saying, like, less than a decade ago, Under Armour was sort of thought to be the next big thing, and now with Auburn shifting from Under Armour to Nike, a little bit of an example of we just don't hear as much about Under Armour as we used to, do we? And I guess the only reason why I find this interesting is, listen, I'm not the world's biggest Nike fan necessarily either, but you know, Georgia has said this year they're studying Nike. And I think a story like this, if I'm right in terms of how I'm reading this, it's perhaps a reason about why Nike is worth being studied. It's because, you know, ever since, I guess, what, post-Michael Jordan, they've been sort of the name in the apparel game. And a lot of folks have tried to take them down, and Under Armour apparently took a pretty big swing. But somehow, some way, Nike's still on top. How do they do that? How do they maintain their brand value with a upstart like Under Armour taking a pretty big swing? Perhaps that's the reason why Georgia's studying them to the extent that they are. I find that to be pretty interesting. All right, let me do one more thing here before we bring on Jake Fromm as a part of our Kroger Fresh Take. We'll kind of wrap that up as far as our cruise around the SEC courtesy of Royal Caribbean. Let me give you a heads up about this. So tomorrow during our RS Andrews cooldown, this is a total break from protocol. This is an unprecedented deal here, but we believe the buildup to G-Day is worth doing this. We are going to take some calls live on our RS Andrews cooldown tomorrow. So if you want to join us the way you do for our Dog Nation postgame show or some of the shows that we've done throughout time, if you want to do that tomorrow during the RS Andrews cooldown, you get a chance to do that. We just want to kind of do some G-Day storylines. We'll do some recruiting stuff. You want to do the portal thing? We'll kind of do, we'll just sort of do whatever. Not for 1,000 hours because we don't have time, nor do you. You've got stuff to do as well. But we will do it for a little bit tomorrow. So for the RS Andrews cooldown tomorrow, which takes place immediately after the show, if you want to be a part of that show, we'll give you a link to join. You can call in. Some of you have been saying, when are y'all going to do calls again on Dog Nation Daily? Well, the answer is tomorrow during the RS Andrews cooldown. So you get a chance to do that. That should be a lot of fun. Now, speaking of calls, we had a chance to conduct one yesterday with the great former Georgia quarterback Jake Fromm. He had a lot of very interesting things to say. So what do you say we keep that conversation going right now as a part of a Kroger Fresh Take, bringing on Jake Fromm here to the program today. And here on Dog Nation Daily, time now for a Kroger Fresh. Get a chance to welcome in the former Georgia quarterback Jake Fromm to the program. Obviously, lots to talk to Jake about as the Dogs get ready for G-Day on Saturday. Jake, obviously, welcome to the program. We appreciate your time, and I'm curious, if you put yourself back in the position of being a Georgia football player again, what's the mindset here? You know, spring practice coming to an end, are players looking forward to that? Maybe, you know, are they thinking about summer? Like, what are you thinking about right now if you're a Georgia player knowing that your spring practice ends on Saturday?
Yeah. Hey, Brandon, what's going on? As always, glad to be here. Thank you for having me. And for me, I always looked at G-Day as more of a, it was fun. It was an event. You know, spring ball sometimes can kind of drag on. It can be tough at times, you know, because you're not prepping to play anybody. You're just playing yourselves and hitting each other for 14, 15 practices. So G-Day to me was an opportunity to go out and have fun, really enjoy it. It's an opportunity to practice in front of a lot of fans. And it really just kind of show everybody, you know, else the work that you've put in all winter and all spring, and here's our product, and we're going to get a lot better. But here we are right now. And, for me, it was just a lot of fun, and, really just getting a lot of family in town, and it's an opportunity to play football, not in football season.
No doubt about that. You know how we all are, too. We're all trying to listen and hear these rumors of who's doing what. And everything we've heard thus far, and you would obviously expect this to be true, is that Carson Beck's had an outstanding spring. And I think a lot of us are curious of seeing, you know, what does he look like now, especially compared to a year ago when I really felt like he took some, you know, on G-Day, he kind of demonstrated the kind of player he could be during the season. And now you sort of expect to see a little bit more growth, a little bit more maturity, just, you know, kind of putting on display the different version of himself here for 2024. As somebody who knows the quarterback position well, like, what would you expect to notice about Beck? Is it the way in which he distributes the football? I know it's not a, you know, real football game. He's not being tackled to the ground. So some of the best of Carson Beck perhaps not on display then. But, you know, what do you see from a guy like Carson, you know, kind of demonstrating now the confidence of kind of knowing he's the guy and obviously everybody expecting to have a very big year?
Yeah, I'm going to speak on kind of both sides of my mouth here. One, I expect Carson to pick up exactly where he left off. He left last season on a very high note. And all the reports that I've heard from spring is that, you know, he's killing it. He's doing great. He's making strides, becoming that leader that they need him to be. And then also too, the product and the success of G-Day really is in the palm of the play caller's hand. Yeah. So what, you know, whatever Bobo and Kirby have decided, hey, what are we going to show on offense? What are we going to call? It really just kind of depends on what they want to do and what they want to show the rest of the world. So G-Day always kind of came down to, hey, who's calling plays for you? And if they're going to dial it up, great. And if they're not, you're just going to kind of get a bland product. But you're going to see him go out and operate and do all the things that that they need him to do as quarterback.
Because one of the things I've always thought was interesting about that is that, you know, a lot of other SEC teams do some ones against twos and things like that. And I've always sort of felt like, I guess I'm a conspiracy theorist, but sometimes these teams sort of stack the deck so the offense can look good. But it seems like at Georgia, they don't do as much of that, right? Where it's like, you know, one offense against the one defense a lot, and therefore twos against twos. So whatever you get offensively, you got to go out there and sort of earn it because you're playing your essential equivalent on the defensive side that Georgia doesn't stack the deck on G-Day for its offense the way that some of these SEC teams seem to.
No, I mean, that's what makes Kirby and Georgia different is that, hey, it is a lot of good on good. The program is built around competition and constantly having to compete and earn your job. And no other way do you get better by just competing against the best of the best, which is why Kirby believes so much in going ones on ones, good on good. And then you see that even on G-Day. Hey, it doesn't matter. Nobody cares who's going to have success, you know, on one side of the ball or the other. Maybe the fans will, but you're going to get a lot of players getting better because of that.
Well, the other thing, too, is, and I guess I'm weird about this, I like the fact that G-Day is still a real football game and the fact that the score starts off 0-0 and, like, two teams are playing something that's – there's no special teams for the most part, but it's like a real football game where it's like some of these spring games are like glorified practices and some of the teams have these, like, really weird – modified like scoring systems and you have to have like an explainer to kind of understand what you're actually watching. I like the fact that G-Day is a football game. It's 0-0 to begin with, and whichever team, red versus black, has the most points wins the game. I sort of like the fact that it still sort of feels somewhat traditional.
Yeah, leave the handicap stuff for golf.
Yeah,
you know, shout out to the Masters coming up this weekend. Leave that for golf. This is football. We play football. We start 0-0. Offense scores points. You know, two teams are playing each other, which I love about it. Thought was really cool. And, you know, being a quarterback, like to me, like I'm competing against the other team. Like I'm going out to try to beat this team. And, but that's the way we looked at it. It's the way we viewed it. And you obviously wanted to come out and win.
I even like the fact they use different locker rooms, you know, like the red team kind of dresses in the nice locker room.
Yeah.
The black team sort of dresses, or no, I guess it's the opposite, whatever. You know, both sides, like they come out of different locker rooms. They have different opening videos. I like the fact that Georgia kind of gets into telling the story of, for today anyway, this is two different teams.
That's right. That's right, man. And it's another, Kirby's all about reps and getting better. And it's another rep for those players who don't have maybe as much game experience for them to come out and do everything just like it's a actual football game and get that rep to mentally prepare and get your mind right to go play a football game. I mean, Kirby does it the best. He's one of the best in the business. And that's how he chooses to approach even this game. Maybe not, people look at it not as significant of a game. It's just a spring game. Hey, but man, he's intense all the time and it means something.
I want to talk about Gunnar Stockton for a minute. In our previous conversations, you certainly demonstrated Gunnar's a quarterback you got a lot of belief in. You think he's an intriguing prospect. You were complimentary of his G-Day performance a year ago. And I think a lot of fans are really excited to see something from him, too. And I guess here's what I'm curious of, you know, Jake. Like, how much growth do you expect Gunnar to show us on Saturday? And, you know, what's it like? Because I feel like in Gunnar's case, I think he's still a really impressive prospect. I have a lot of belief that he could be Georgia's starting quarterback next year. And yet, you know, we hear about possible transfers. We hear about, you know, elite recruits all the time. Like, give us a little bit of a reminder of how good you think Gunnar can still be and what he might be able to put on display on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, physically, I think Gunnar has all the tools needed to play football at a high level, at that level. And even the NFL level as well. And then just knowing what I know from Gunnar, man, the work that he puts in, the effort, that he puts in watching film, learning the playbook, and man, I hope he goes out and plays well and, not necessarily put too much pressure on himself, but man, go out, own the role that he's in. And then as always, as a backup quarterback, man, being ready when your number's called and being able to take over a football team and take the football team to the next level.
Speaking of elite recruits at quarterbacks, one of the things we got into the other day is Julian Juju Lewis, a five-star quarterback, had an interesting message where he kind of, what I would say, kind of maybe responded to some critics who have said, oh, he's about NIL and he's about this kind of thing. And he's like, listen, I'm more about development than you know, people are giving me credit for right now. And I think what I'm curious about from your standpoint is when you're a quarterback at a place like Georgia or when you're a recruit coming to Georgia, everybody sort of feels like they know you and everybody sort of tells themselves a story about what they think you're about, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. What's that like to be a young guy and sort of feel like there's this narrative being cast around me that maybe I like or maybe I think is true or maybe I don't. Maybe people are misunderstanding and yet I'm not fully in control of my own story because people feel like they know me and they're saying all this stuff about me. I've got to imagine for a young guy, even for someone like Juju, who seems to be a pretty, you know, confident and very measured young man. I got to imagine that's probably a really weird thing to have a bunch of people talking about you and you not really having a lot of control over what they're saying. And sometimes you feel like the stuff they're saying is not true.
Yeah. I 100%. I mean, I could definitely see that just being such a very unique dynamic of, hey, I feel like I'm one way. The people around me closest to me know that this is the way we do business and the way I conduct and carry myself. And the way this social media and media, you know, as soon as they can put a label on you, that's what you become. And I think, you know, for him, just being true to himself, knowing who he is, and just can't let the outside noise maybe get to you. And then I think as long as you just keep doing the things that you do, I think people around you see it and respect it. And I think a lot of respect is earned by just coming in and working, just lowering your head, getting to work, and you just earn a lot of respect on the football field.
I've got another topic I want to hit with you in a moment here. Let me remind folks, though, this is our Kroger Fresh Take with Jake Fromm here on Dog Nation Daily. And, of course, one of the things we remind you of is you want to save more money. You want to get more time to enjoy the things you love this time of year. Like Jake said, watching the Masters or Braves baseball or whatever else. Hey, the way to get more time to do the things you love is by becoming a member of Kroger Boost. And when you become a Kroger Boost member, you're going to get free grocery delivery. That means you don't have to go all over town getting your stuff. Kroger brings that right to you. And during this time in which it seems like everything's getting more expensive, including perhaps sometimes fuel prices, you can save money at the fuel pump there as well when it comes to Kroger Boost, too, because you get 2 fuel points for every dollar you spend right there at your local Kroger. So you can try that, get a chance to experience all of that online. It's Kroger.com/boost for more on that. That's Kroger.com/boost for more on that. All right, Jake, last thing. I know you've been busy. You've been going through some of your off-season work and things like that. You may not have seen this, but the other day, there was a little bit of chatter. I don't think this is true, but it's certainly been a conversation starter. But the idea that we may really be getting closer to some important, powerful people trying to push for this breakaway of college football into what's kind of being called a super league, where it'd be 70 or 80 teams banding together, conferences perhaps coming to an end as we've understood them. It seems like the SEC is not in favor of this, and so therefore likely not to happen here right now. But it also seems like these conversations are getting a little more serious, even if it's not quite time for all that to take place as of yet. You know, what do you make of all of this? I know how much you love baseball. It seems like if you broke away the football and you tried to have the other sports without that, a sport like baseball might suffer. We've all, you know, been kind of impressed by what Caitlin Clark's been doing. It seems like women's basketball might suffer from that, too. There's or in all other kinds of sports there as well. It seems like there'd be, in other words, a lot that you'd still have to answer about all of this. But it also seems like at some point in time, some really, really new model might become a reality. Have you followed this? And what do you think about all of that that's kind of out there related to this sort of topic here right now?
Yeah, at the moment, I would say I'm very naive to kind of the dynamics in college football with the leagues and separating. It's actually funny that you mentioned it today on the show because we talked about it in the quarterback room today about the Super League. So there's so many different opinions. There may not be a perfect answer. I'm just so curious to see what it becomes. I really hope the right people get in the right room, lock the door, and figure this whole thing out. There's a lot of gray and a lot up in the air. And I think it'll be good for the college athletes. I think it'll be good for the young athletes aspiring to play in college. And I think it'll be great, obviously, too, for the fans, just knowing what product they're getting and what they're buying into to watch. But as of right now, it just really looks like the trend is going towards college football becoming more of a professional sport. So what does the NCAA really do now? I don't know. They've lost a lot of power in this. Maybe that's a good thing. I think probably losing a little bit of power is a good thing, but there's so many different ways this could go, and I'm just really curious to see how it all unfolds.
Before we let you go, mom and baby doing good right now? Family happy? Everybody good there?
Yep, doing great. Yes, sir. Thank you for asking.
But you are away from them right now up there in the D.C. area for some of the off-season workouts, right?
Yep. So away during the week, coming back on the weekends to spend some time, man. Time is precious, and, man, you go away for a week, and, man, he's already growing up and getting big fast. So trying to soak up all the time I can.
Well, I certainly know that you will do all of that for sure. Jake, we appreciate your time. Thanks for being with us here today. And obviously looking forward to seeing some of the stuff we've talked about on G-Day there on Saturday and then getting a chance to talk to you about that very soon here again as well as a part of a Kroger Fresh Take. We appreciate your time.
Yeah, Brandon, can't wait. Thank you.
Really good stuff there from the former Georgia quarterback, Jake Fromm. And speaking of good stuff, we got good stuff on tap for Saturday in addition to G-Day. Dog Nation coverage of G-Day both before and after. Our home away from home is going to be right there at the UGA bookstore. Many of you have asked. I want to make sure I give you information about this. In addition to Dog Nation being on hand, including myself, there on Saturday at the UGA bookstore, don't forget also, as you've come to expect, big autograph signings there as well. In fact, coming up on Saturday before the game, you've got the great former Georgia quarterback, the national champion, Buck Ballew, going to be signing copies of his book. And how about this? Kamari Lassiter on hand for autographs there as well. That's from 10:30 a.m. till 12:30 p.m. coming up on Saturday. Buck Ballew, Kamari Lassiter. I'm also told a special guest, surprise guest, coming up there as well, too. So a special surprise guest. Who knows who that's going to be? But Kamari Lassiter, the future star in the NFL, and Buck Ballew, the national champion quarterback, signing copy of his book. Really special opportunity to get some great autographs from a couple of great former UGA stars. All of that going down 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. at the UGA bookstore coming up on Saturday prior to the game. I'll see you there along with Kaylee Mansell for the pregame. Then I'll be back with you, as I always am, for the Dog Nation postgame show immediately after the game there as well. As we wrap up today, obviously we're kind of rolling into Masters Week, and so many of you reaching out to be a part of our Golden Shoe Masters pool, which I certainly love. And in addition to that, we got a Masters-themed Golden Shoe today that also shouts out our friends at the Finnish Long Drink. Johnny Prescott wrote this into the Facebook comment section of the day. He goes, B.A., finally found the Long Drink peach flavor over the weekend. I think I'll save a couple to pair with a pimento cheese sandwich for some quintessential Georgia-style Masters viewing. Johnny, you are a man after my own heart there on that. You love to see it. A little peach-flavored version of the Finnish Long Drink to go with some pimento cheese sandwiches, getting ready for the Masters. All of that a great idea, and certainly Golden Shoe worthy here today. Lousy, stinking Gators, they don't have anything like that going on in their lives. It's been 1,250 days since they've beaten Georgia. That's our Gator Hater Updater. Y'all have a great day. We'll see you back here tomorrow on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Breda Pest Management.